On the schedule today is a work session on Senate Bill 718, and then we have public hearings and possible work sessions scheduled for Senate Bills 244, 245, and 246. And we will begin with a work session.
We have 718.
Mm-hmm. On Senate Bill 718. So I'll open that work session. Well, if he's delayed, you want to bring him something else? Are you going to handle them?
No, we got the
property tax. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, let's do that. Let me recess the work session on Senate Bill 718. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 244.
I didn't have much hot air in this last meeting right here.
That's kind of empty.
Yeah. What is that?
244?
Yep. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin Mahar. The Senate Bill 244 deals with various types of assessment and taxation laws, and it begins by talking about watercraft, and this is changing the date when watercraft owners must file for a property tax exemption from April 1st to February 15th each year, with exceptions that are stated in 308.520, who shall file by March 15th. This applies for tax years beginning on or after July 1st of 2000. Then in Section 3, it is pertaining to the procedure by which Department of Revenue Director grants property tax exemptions on the grounds of a hardship. This relates to cases where the property is subject to taxation but would have been exempt if there had been a timely filing of a claim for the exemption. So if a hardship exemption is granted, the director will send a written recommendation to the county assessor. And under current law, though, both the county assessor and the county governing body must agree with the director's recommendation. And under this measure, only the county assessor has to agree with the director's decision to grant the exemption. Then in Section 4, we're clarifying the annual war veterans exemptions from property taxation, and we're tying it to the 3% increase each year due to the 3% increase in assessed value and taxes. This is consistent with the constitutional requirement, Article 11, Section 11, subsection 2, that partial exemptions be tied to an annual increase of 3% each year over the prior year's exemption limit. And there's been another bill in the House Bill 2040, which has dealt with the same issue, and Kate Gimenary will speak about that. But this is really just changing and updating the war veterans exemption to $8,750, which is a 3% increase, and then and the other limit of $11,670 being increased. This begins on July 1st of 2000. The amount of the exemption then will increase by 3% each year. And then in Section 4A, it's giving surviving spouses of war veterans who die during the assessment year additional time to file for the exemption. They have until December 31st of the assessment year instead of the May deadline. And this applies in July of 1999. Then in Section 7, it adds personal property owned by cemetery to the list of property exempt from property taxation. And this begins on or after July 1st of 2000. You can see there's several different topics all within this bill. Section 9 goes into a different topic on the application process for certain charitable organizations. And under current law, if the ownership and use of the property remains unchanged, then a new statement claiming the exemption is not required. But under this measure, an organization would not be required to file a new claim statement if their use of the property changed, unless the use was to a non-exempt use. That'll be the only time that a charitable organization would have to refile. So this says that the institution shall notify the county assessor within 30 days of that change in the use, and this begins on July 1st of 2000. Now, if an institution owns property that exempts and improvements or additions are made to the property, the organization must file an application with the county assessor to have these improvements exempt from taxation. The addition shall qualify for the exemption, even if this application is not filed in a timely manner, but they will have to pay a late filing fee. And this begins July 1st of 1994. So all of these different sections, even though it's quite as bright as topics, none of them have a really significant impact to local government.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Maneri, signed in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jim Maneri with the Department of Revenue. I do have a summary sheet, I think, that I submitted. It just summarizes the issues for you. The first issue has to do with a process for filing. This is for watercraft. For instance, with the department, that would be like tugboats. The department values them every year, and they have to submit their returns with the information by February 1st. But there isn't this, and now this is an exemption that they can qualify for. It basically says, for instance, if your tugboat's in dry dock under major repair, you won't have to pay your tax for that year. So it's an exemption. The filing exemption deadline is April 1st. We found that that's created some confusion, and it's easy to forget that second filing. And so we talked to some of the tugboat companies and others that we assess, and they agreed that it would be a lot easier if they could file it all together when they file with us. So this first part of the bill basically uses the same filing date of February 1st when they file their information with us for the assessment. That way we can give them instructions that way too, so it's clear that it's all filed at the same time together. That's section one. Section two is just the implementing. Section three is there is in the law a relief provision where the Department of Revenue, it's called hardship, the Department of Revenue finds that a relief should be granted to a taxpayer, and then under the law, that the department recommends it to the county, goes to the county assessor, who then can recommend it to the county governing body, who then makes a decision. In all these years in practice, the county governing bodies always accept the assessor's recommendation in terms of granting the relief. So what we're doing in Section 3 is eliminating that third step, which just holds it up, of actually have to go into the county governing body. So if the department recommends it and the assessor agrees, they would receive the relief. Section 4 has to do with, in our bill, we are updating the provisions under the veterans exemption, though I would say you've already dealt with this. And House Bill 2040 has come through here before, and it already changes these, so we'd recommend that you delete the provisions dealing with this. It would be, I believe, 4 through 6. Section 7 is another practical one. Most exemptions in the statutes apply to real and personal property, and for some strange reason that we ran across, exemption for cemeteries only refers to real property. Now, personal property is going to be like the shovels and that kind of stuff. And we're not aware of any assessor that's ever gone in and assessed the personal property of cemetery. It's treated like all others. So basically, Section 7 is doing this, saying that the personal property is also exempt. And Section 8 implements that. Section 9 comes out of a Secretary of State audit we had a while back. Secretary of State came in and audited some of the charitable exemptions. And in the course of that audit, discovered probably the best example would be that the YMCA in Medford had added a new swimming facility, a swimming pool. Now that is an exempt type of operation for the Y, no question about it. But the Secretary of State pointed out that the statute technically says that when you add property like that, you have to file a new application for your exemption. The implication being is that if you don't realize that you're supposed to and don't file a new application, you lose your entire exemption for all your facilities. We didn't agree with the Secretary of State in terms of what we thought the intent was. So what this bill does, basically to cover that, it says that if you, if the assessor for some reason, this is how it comes up, discovers that you've added property and there's a question as to whether it qualifies, say the Y's case, the Y would then file a new application including the new property that was added. An assessor would be able to make a new determination on it. Even if say it's 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and you discover it, the assessor then could accept the application and make a determination whether it qualifies or not. If it does qualify, like in the Wise case, that'd be fine. It'd be over because you were given the exemption during those years anyway. If it didn't qualify, then the assessor would do the normal act of disqualifying. This section does provide that in that case where they file a new application, they would have to pay a late filing fee. And that's a common one in exemptions where they haven't filed and they should. That's just an incentive to remind organizations that they should be notifying the assessor if they're, in this case, they're adding new property. But they wouldn't be disqualified in terms of their property just because they didn't file an application. And then Section 10 implements that. That covers Senate Bill 244.
All right, thank you. On that Section 3, where you eliminate, where it's recommended we eliminate the county governing body's approval, and you tell us historically that ever denied it. Did you check with the Association of Oregon Counties? It's just hard for me to imagine any governing body giving up authority. Great new trend.
Mr. Chair, I can't remember if we did. It was long ago we worked on this, but I
didn't sign up on the bill, so. But I appreciate that. Are there other questions? Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to, did you have a question for
me? Mr. Maneri, the recommendation on Section 4.6 for Veterans Disability, is that the only one that would require an amendment to the bill?
Yes. The leading on section.
So if we chose to act on this, that's something which you could take care of in the House side.
Oh, I assume we could if you want to.
Probably just we have to go legislative council to get wording.
We're deleting the provision. Thank you for your testimony.
Not yet.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 244? And that will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 244. We'll open a work session, Senate Bill 244. Well, we can go one of two routes. We could either delete it, or we could, if we sent the bill over as printed, and I think the fear is that somebody makes a change and they two bills cross in the middle of the night and maybe somebody makes one little sentence change or something like that.
We would explain it taking out the session.
Yeah.
Well, we could strike 4 to 6.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I would move that we amend Senate Bill 244 by striking sections 4 and 6 in Senate Bill 4 through 6.
Senator Byer moves to delete sections 4 through 6. Senate Bill 244. Fair discussion. Their objection. Hearing and seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Senator Byers?
I would move Senate Bill 244 to the floor with the due pass as amended.
Senator Byer moves Senate Bill 244 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? There, well, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byer.
Aye.
Senator Hartman.
Aye.
Senator Schroer.
Aye.
Dexter Rouse.
Aye.
John Miller.
Both aye. Senate Bill 244 has amended passed to the floor. Due pass recommendation. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 244. Senator Byer, would you like to carry that? Thank you very much. Now, we will revert back to the work session. Oh, he's not here. All right. We will not go forward. We'll now move on to public hearing on Senate Bill 245.
Okay, with Senate Bill 245, this measure is clarifying the statutes pertaining to Indian taxation on Indian country. So this measure extends personal property from taxation for Indians residing upon federally recognized Indian country. The federal law already restricts states from taxing personal property on federally recognized Indian territory, and this applies for property tax years beginning on or after July 1st of 1999. Under current statutes, all Indians residing on any reservation, whether it is federally recognized or not, receive the property tax exemption. So this would not have a revenue impact.
All right, Mr. Maneri.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jim Maneri with the Department of Revenue. With me is Bob Muir from Attorney General's office. Senate Bill 245 fundamentally is language that's been around for a while in terms of exempting property of Indians. And since this language was put into law, we've had some U.S. Supreme Court decisions. And then some of the assessors were wondering what lands in severalty meant. So we had enough confusion over it that we asked the Attorney General's office, can you take a look at this and maybe change the language so we don't get ourselves in trouble in terms of violating federal law? And so Bob Muir has looked at that and talked to some counsel from the tribes, and I'll let Bob explain the language.
All right. Welcome, Mr. Muir.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Muir. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Oregon Department of Justice. I'm assigned as General Counsel to the Department of Revenue. Mr. Maneri has summarized my assignment accurately. We reviewed the case law, the U.S. Supreme Court case law, recent case law on the subject. There's been a movement away from the term reservation as it applies to Indian property, and the Supreme Court is now referring to a broader concept called Indian country. And the Supreme Court case that where this features most prominently was the Oklahoma Tax Commission versus the SAC and Fox Nation decision out of the Tenth Circuit in 1993. And in that case, the Indians did not reside on a formal reservation. They resided on federal trust land that had been assigned to them individually, individual parcels. And that was one of the arguments that the state of Oklahoma unsuccessfully urged upon the courts that because these tribal members didn't reside on a reservation, the general exemption that applied to their income in that case did not apply, and that argument was rejected. The Indian country, generally speaking, is any land set aside by the federal government under federal law for the residents of Indian, whether or not it's a formal reservation or not, and whether it's contiguous territory or individual parcels or not. What we have in this state and what is most common in the United States is reservations, but that's not the only model that the federal government uses with the tribes. And what you see in the language here of the bill, the changes that have been made in Senate Bill 245 are an attempt to accomplish two objectives: make it simple enough to be understood by lay people, the assessors who apply this law, but also consistent with federal law. If these changes weren't made, we would still advise revenue to apply the law according to what you see here in the changes. Federal law is supreme. We will follow it. But without these changes, the assessors will have to figure out what words like severalty mean. And they will incorrectly reach the conclusion that personal property, you see that in the line 9 and 10 there. So the personal property of such Indians upon reservation shall be exempt from taxation only when so provided by any law of the United States. Well, a personal property is exempt if it is owned by the Indian, a federally recognized Indian, that is to say, one of a registered tribe, and it's on Indian country or in Indian country, whether or not there's a federal statute that says so. That's the case law of the United States with respect to the treatment of the tribes. So, in sum, I believe this these amendments faithfully represent the current state of the law, U.S. federal law concerning the taxation of property of Indian tribes, and at the same time it's hopefully simple enough to be understood by the assessors.
All right, are there questions? Senator Beyer.
Well, Bob, this would apply to the, for example, the casino in Lincoln City?
I do not know whether... Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I do not know whether the casino in Lincoln City is on land that has been set aside for the residents of Indians or not. But if it did...
They're all on trust land, but they're some of them are outside of reservations.
That's right. If it is land set aside for the residents of Indians, then it would apply. And I just don't know, as a matter of fact, whether it does. Mm-hmm.
Other questions? Thank you both. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 245? If not, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 245. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 245. Senator Wild.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move SB 245 for a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Wild moves Senate Bill 245 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion? If not, the clerk would call the roll.
Senator
Nyton. Aye.
Senator
Starr. Aye.
Senator Beyer.
Aye.
Chuck Sherlock.
Aye. Chuck Miller. Vote aye. Senate Bill 245 is passed to the floor. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 245. Wild.
Sure.
Thank you very much. We'll now open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 246. Mr. Maneri. Liz. I'll let Mr. Maneri start and start
this. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jim Maneri with the Department of Revenue. Senate Bill 246 addresses three different issues that have to do with correcting the rule. The first issue in Sections 1 and 2 is just it's some clarifying language under Measure 50 and calculating the Measure 50 limit. And this is the case where the assessor is adding omitted property to the roll that wasn't on the roll it should have been. And since it is property that the assessor did not have on the roll at the time, there's no Measure 50 limit calculation for it. So this language is just clarifying for the assessors how to calculate the limit, which is, for instance, if it existed in 1997. First year of Measure 50, you'd treat it the same as you would any other property that was on the roll then in terms of calculating it. So this is fundamentally just clarification on how to do that. Section 2 does the same thing. Section 3, there are the dash 1 amendments for Section 3. Basically is dealing with the disqualification of property tax exemption. Under current law, if a nonprofit organization wants to get an exemption on their property, they will file an application with the assessor. And the assessor approves it, so they're exempt. If after that time, at some point in time, the assessor, which may be a new one, determines that the property shouldn't have been exempt, and under current law, you would go back and bill that organization for back taxes up to 5 years. This bill is amended on the dash ones, would basically say you don't go back and bill back taxes, because the government, in this case the assessor, had made a determination that it was exempt, and the taxpayer relied on that determination, and now at a later stage it's discovered that there was an error. And so because of that, we're proposing that if in that case the assessor would disqualify it prospectively only and not go with back taxes. And that's basically what Section 3 does. Section 4 is only a clarification has to do with omitted property, again, where there's an error. And this has to do with, it's really relating to industrial property. That's because current law refers to, and that would be on page 3 of the bill, and line 8, refers to a real property return, which is filed. Now, for much of the property reported at the county level, that's what you have. You have a separate real property return and a separate personal property return. But for industrial, we have a combined return. For the convenience both of the company and us, we just put it on one form, both personal and real. And this is just a clarification that, it, in effect, that it could include a combined return. And that covers the bill.
All right. Now you mentioned the dash ones, and then it impacts Section 3.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The dash ones basically are a rewrite of Section 3. When we first saw the language, I sat down with Dexter Johnson of Legislative Council, and I probably miscommunicated what was intended there. But as it's written in Section 3, you would go back and assess back taxes on a disqualification, and that's not what we intended. So Dash 1 Act is what we wanted.
All right. Are there questions? Thank you for your testimony. Elizabeth, did you have anything to add to that? Okay. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 246? If not, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 246. Open the work session on Senate Bill 246. Senator Wild.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move the Dash 1 Amendment to SB 246.
Senator Wild moves the Dash 1 Amendment to Senate Bill 246. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Senator Wild.
I'd move SB 246 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Wild moves Senate Bill 246 to the floor as amended with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes, I think that Section 3 is a great change. Yeah. Must be part of that new and friendlier. I hope this catches on. I'm aware in some situations with at the federal level with these private letter rulings where among the abilities that the IRS has is to not only reverse themselves on private letter rulings, but to make the decision retroactive, which is just unbelievable for the taxpayer who has relied on the information provided by the agency you hopefully get good information from. So this is a wonderful change.
Yeah.
Senator Beyer.
And this might actually stop every legislative session in 3 or 4.
All right, if there's no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Stowers?
Aye.
Senator
Byron? Aye.
Senator
Hartung? Aye.
Vice Chair
Brown?
Aye.
Chair Miller? Aye. Senate Bill 246, as amended, is passed to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. We'll close the public hearing, or work session, excuse me, on Senate Bill 246.
You guys carry one last time.
Well, I do so much work up front. You come down from my post? With you all?
I'll carry it.
Thank you, Senator Starr would like to carry that. All right. We'll now open up a work session on Senate Bill 718.
Am I looking for work?
Oh, yeah. Mr. Meyer. Just refresh our memories on Senate Bill 718, please.
Okay, Senate Bill 718, the original bill dealt with use of fuel taxes. It would allow school districts, education service districts, and their contractors to file for refunds for taxes paid, use fuel taxes paid on diesel, propane, and natural gas, any fuel used other than gasoline. So it would allow those refunds for the taxes paid, and it would also apply to the 12 months prior to the effective date. So if it went into effect in October of 99, it could file for refunds back to October of 98. You had testimony from various groups, the Department of Education, school districts, special districts, wanting to be included in this, and that led to the request for the -1 amendment. You have, and the -1 amendment would allow the refund, allow any governmental unit of this state to file for refunds, and it would also make it retroactive to the 12-month period preceding the effective date of this act. So it would expand the refunds beyond school districts to any governmental unit that isn't exempt now or is only partially exempt from the use of fuel tax now. And then you have the revenue impact statement for the -1 as well.
Right. Let me inquire, governmental units, is that state or any entity, any government entity?
State and any governmental unit of the state. So it doesn't include
they don't include cities and counties?
Yes. Special districts, cities, counties, school districts, education service districts.
Would this have their revenue?
There is, yes. Yeah.
That's highway funds?
Correct. The numbers you see there only refer to the highway fund. Obviously, the counties and the states would receive some refunds that are not netted out of these numbers. We didn't have that information yet. We're working on that. But this is only the state highway fund distribution and not net of refunds that the counties and the states would receive. Cities are currently exempt, so they wouldn't qualify for any more refunds.
That assumes the -1.
Yes.
Without the -1,
you have the revenue impact from the last meeting,
okay.
3.28 for 99-01 and 2.69 for 2001-03. Again, the reason for the decline in the 2001 pre-biennium is that 99-01, you have that 12-month period prior to the effective date, making that estimate higher.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Beyer?
Mr. Meyer, does this include, I know this originally was brought forth by ODOT in terms of paying itself taxes, sort of it had the money and then it paid the tax, sort of a circular thing, and the discussion last time was that cities and counties are doing the same thing. Is this
netted, or?
Counties are doing the same thing. Cities are currently exempt.
So they are exempt from paying tax now.
Currently are.
So we're only talking about counties and state agencies.
And
only about diesel. Well, special districts like
that. District education, yes. And the diesel fuel use tax.
Actually, last question.
Very well.
Thank you. I brought this bill forward at the end of the session. And it actually
made it out of the Senate. Because I knew that the transportation package was going to get killed, and that was part of that. So
you're wildly in support.
Thank you for that.
Yes, I do support this, because at least without the dash one. Because, yeah, this is what I brought forward right near the end. And unfortunately, the House just didn't get it through. If they had, we wouldn't have to be dealing with it now, would we?
All right. Any more further discussion?
Any more time?
We are in a work session.
Senator Starr.
I would favor moving the bill without the dash one.
Well, all right. Unless the motion now entertains some additional discussion, or we can just try that motion and see if... All right, let me... is there a discussion on... Senator Starr has moved. Well, okay. Senator Byron.
I would move to amend the motion to include the dash one amendment.
Well, let's see if that's... all right. Let me substitute that motion. Senator Byer has moved to amend Senator Starr's motion of moving Senate Bill 718 by inserting the dash one amendment. Their discussion of the dash one amendment.
Just one. It strikes me, and the reason I thought this was a good idea initially was we're just circulating the money around. This is diesel tax. It goes into the transportation fund, and the way it's set up now, the counties and the ODOT are just taxing themselves to put it back into the fund again. It's just circulating the money. It makes sense. It doesn't make sense to me to do that. It has some benefit to what it's at.
Other comments? My preferences would be to just send the bill as printed, and then if that other chamber wants to deal with additional government entities, they can be our guests, and then we can talk about it when it comes back over if I have a few months. If we could. All right. Perhaps there's no necessity to vote on the amendments, and perhaps
I will try.
It's withdrawn. All right. Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 718 to the floor. So they do pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Byer.
Aye.
Senator Hartman.
Aye.
Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Lau.
Aye.
Chair Miller.
Vote aye. Senate Bill 718 is passed to the floor. And we will close the work session on Senate Bill 718. Senator Hartung will be asked to carry that bill.
No.
And is there anything further to come before the committee? Yes. Tomorrow afternoon we will not be meeting, and Wednesday we have the grand tour of the Department of Revenue.
Pick the best day.
And so we will meet over there at the director's office or thereabouts. Fourth floor is the director's office at our usual meeting time of 3 p.m. And they will appear to look busy as
they work here.
We're looking over their shoulders.
Yes. There's nothing further to come before the committee. We are adjourned.